This is Daily Tips That May or May Not Help You, the podcast where my co-host Ned Donovan and I, my name's Ariel Nissenblatt, share tips that they may or may not help you. And we're here for a special episode because this month, our guest tipper of the month is Maya Molina Schaefer. Throughout the month, she's going to be sharing tips every Wednesday. And today we're going to dive into the philosophy behind her tips and a little bit about her career and her relationship to hacks and optimizing her life and a bunch of other things. Maya is probably the most organized guest tipper that we've ever had. She sent me an amazing document ahead of time with all of her tips laid out. So this interview is going to be extremely structured and you're going to get so much out of it. Before we dive in, Maya, give us the quick rundown. Who are you? What are you bringing to the table today?
Yeah, I think like many people, I've always held many different hats and worn many different hats. So currently I'm the Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives for Amplify Her Foundation, which is a private foundation in New York City that invests in women and girls from underserved minority communities in New York City. But previously, I also served 20 years in the military. So I'm a proud military veteran. I have been a lifelong gender equity advocate. I'm a storyteller. I'm a mom. So I hold lots of different titles, but I'm excited to kind of dive into some of those.
You do so much that I want to talk to you about. And I didn't even know when I asked you to be on this show that you are a storyteller with the moth. So we're going to get into that.
Yeah.
So Maya, tell us about pivoting and your relationship to the ongoing pivot of life.
Yeah, absolutely. I am someone that has probably pivoted in more arenas than most people attempt in a lifetime. You know, I started off in the boxing ring at the Naval Academy. I went on to serve in combat zones. I pivoted then into diplomatic negotiations as a military diplomat. Then I went on to be a professor at West Point. And then now my biggest pivot into the civilian sector in philanthropy in New York City. So I love kind of hacks and optimizations because, you know, every pivot that I've taken has really taught me that success isn't just about working hard. It's also about having the right systems and frameworks to navigate in like unfamiliar terrain. So I'm really obsessed with hacks and optimizations. I'm interested in strategies that help you pivot successfully, how to build credibility fast, and then know how to transfer the skills and kind of, again, what not to do in your new job, like what you have to learn and unlearn to really lead effectively when you're not necessarily the expert in the room.
And recognizing that you're not the expert in the room. Huge.
Being humble Huge. Enough to recognize that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. You had a long career in the military. Give us some advice for someone who is pursuing a career in the military.
Yeah, absolutely. So the military will definitely teach you tactical skills, but you have to deliberately develop the skills that are going to carry you beyond the uniform. So what I mean by that is really try to choose a job where you can also utilize those skill sets beyond the uniform, right? So communication, cultural intelligence, emotional awareness. You know, you're going to meet a ton of different leaders at a ton of different ranks. And I think it's really important to, one, evaluate what type of leadership skill sets that you really admire, that you find are really effective. And then on the other hand, you know, take a look at the leaders that you don't think are effective or that you don't feel take care of their people well. And then I always like to say, like, have your little toolbox, you know, kind of store that knowledge below. And I think once you understand what works and what you resonate with, you can carry that forward, certainly out of uniform into the civilian sector.
Do you recommend writing down your values, writing down the leadership principles that you like, dislike in order to, you know, save them up for when it's time for you to be a leader?
Absolutely. First of all, everyone in the military is a leader at some level. And I'm a big proponent that, you know, your leadership style is going to continue to grow and continue to change as you grow with the organization and as you obviously experience more in your life. So I think it's important to journal that down, to write down, you know, currently, these are my leadership principles. These are my morals and values. I'm not willing to compromise. This is the ethos that I'm going to follow, and kind of catalog that. And as you grow and as you have more experiences, you know, go back and reflect on that. Has something changed? Did you experience something that really tested those morals or those ethos that you had? I can tell you that I feel like I definitely grew and significantly changed as a leader when I compare myself as like a very young lieutenant leading Marines early on in Iraq to being like a senior leader as a professor at West Point. Like those two officers are like almost night and day. I will say that my morals and values and my basic principles have always been my through line. However, my approach to people, the way I communicate better, the way I synthesize, you know, knowledge and facts has really changed. So, you know, be open always to growth, but also just observe what's going on around you and really take in what is resonating with you and what's not.
Do you have specific advice for us on when something is uncomfortable, whether it's with a new job or specifically for you, of course, getting into this career, this long career? I'm sure things started out not super comfy for you.
Yeah, I think it's really important that I found that I grew the most as a person, as a leader, when I was doing the hard assignments, the assignments that no one wanted, right? So I recommend, you know, seek discomfort early. Some people might be really adverse to kind of doing the hard assignments first, but I recommend it because you get to learn a lot about yourself. You get to learn a lot about how teams work, how to lead teams, and also just doing jobs that you're not immediately the expert on. And it's in those kind of difficult scenarios that I find that people grow the most and they learn the most.
And then to be successful in the military, as in life, cross-functional relationships are super important. How do you build those relationships?
I think it's really important to build relationships that go across cultural and organizational lines. You know, your network of your mentors, of your friends, shouldn't just be people that look exactly like you or share, for example, your specific job or your specific unit. I think it's really valuable to have connections that are made with, you know, other partners, whether that's foreign military partners, maybe it's other partners that you work with, other military members in other services. You know, I really thrived in West Africa when I was working there because I was able to build relationships with so many different stakeholders. And, you know, also diversity of thought. You know, the more people you have around you and the more diverse your network is, the more that they're going to challenge your assumptions, but the more they're going to push you to grow and to really understand what's going on.
What's your advice for just walking up to somebody and saying hello when you have no real reason to say hello? What's the excuse that you tell yourself? Like, I just got to go shake this person's hand.
Well, for me, I feel like every person I meet has an amazing story. So I'm just a curious cat. I'm always interested to hear, you know, how did they get to where they are today? You know, what drives them? What are their ambitions? How can I help support? So if you just like walk up and have like, you know, respect goes a long way. Being humble goes a long way. So when you genuinely are a good listener and you want to hear about the other person, I think that's always a great way to start a conversation.
Be curious. Don't just wait for your chance to speak, but
exactly.
Kind of pause before responding. I think that's big.
Yeah.
Of course, you were in the military for 20 plus years, but eventually you were not in the military anymore. What do you do when you decide that you're going to transition out? And do you have advice for folks who are pivoting?
Right. I think one of the most difficult things that veterans deal with when they're transitioning out of the military, no matter if they spent 3 years to 20 years, is how do you really translate your military experience into civilian language, right? It's really difficult if you jump out of helicopters or you lead teams on the ground in combat. You know, sometimes it's really difficult to explain that to someone
on a resume,
especially a civilian. Yeah, on a resume for someone that has never experienced the same things as you. So my tip is to really don't wait until that pivot point to that transition to start figuring out how your military skills can really apply to civilian life. You know, practice articulating your leadership in kind of universal terms and not just military jargon. And also when you're transitioning, really seek out. There's incredible veteran transition programs now that are available all across the country, and they specifically help you do this, whether that's on the resume, whether that's when you're interviewing for your new job. So I really recommend reaching out to those organizations and taking advantage of those. They're predominantly free for veterans, and they're going to help you succeed in the civilian world.
Speaking of success, how do you succeed in the military as a woman? How did you succeed? And was it difficult?
Yeah, you know, starting off in the Marine Corps, I was the fewer the prouder. There wasn't very many women in my units. And, you know, at times it was difficult. It's very lonely, especially as an officer. So my recommendation to women is that, you know, if you're hearing the call to serve your nation, that's what you really want to do, then absolutely raise your right hand. It was probably the most rewarding a career than I could ever imagine for myself. But if you're feeling lonely, always recommend find your community. You know, don't limit yourself with regards to who you hang out with. You know, I needed other women to survive and thrive in really difficult environments. So, but I also want to say, like, I also needed male allies and I needed mentors who believed in my potentials. The majority of the leaders that I had were male. And luckily, I had some incredible leaders that were extremely helpful to guiding my career and giving me some great advice. So, you know, at the same time, find your lady friends. They're always going to support you, cheer you on. It's also just great to have that support network when you're going through things. But also don't, you know, be exclusive, right? Like widen that network to include the men too.
Now that you are a civilian living a civilian life, of course, you are calling on the experience that you had constantly. And you've made a lot of pivots. Currently, you work at a nonprofit. You work for the Amplify Her Foundation. You host a podcast. For people who are listening who might want to get into nonprofits or get into work in philanthropy, what messages do you have for them?
So I'm going to specifically talk to kind of transferring out of the military into philanthropy. That's not a very common sector to transfer into. A lot of times I see my military colleagues transferring into finance or into tech or back kind of into defense services. I really wanted to transfer in philanthropy because my main passion and what drives me has always been to create opportunities for others, specifically for women and girls. So I knew, you know, very early on when I was transitioning out of the military that that's what I wanted to do. And fortunately, that led me to Amplify Her Foundation, which does exactly that for women and girls in New York City. So I really recommend that, you know, when you're transferring into a new sector, especially it's very radically different from the military, it's really important to kind of recalibrate how you lead. And what I mean by that is that you can still use the same strategic thinking that you utilize for the military, but these types of different sectors have different rules of engagement. So I'm going to give you some tips on things that I wish I would have known before I transferred.
Yeah.
First one is that, you know, your old credibility, you know, your title, your MOS, your rank that you held in the military doesn't always necessarily transfer to a civilian career. You know, I had an incredible 20 years in the military, you know, leading units, you know, multiple times in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. But really in philanthropy, that doesn't really mean much. You know, people are always like, well, it's really cool, but like, how does it apply to what you do today? So for me, it was really trying to prove that I understood really community-centered work because I also worked a lot in Africa, working with development partners. And like, just also don't assume that your resume is always going to speak for you, right? Like invest in learning the sector's language, learn like what words to utilize to how to communicate, learn what the values are of that sector, but also the power dynamics. You know, I like to say this is a military term, like know who's who in the zoo, right? Do your analysis on what's going on in that sector and who are the allies that you need to meet, who are the mentors that you need to find. And yeah.
I love something that you wrote down here, which is translate impact into stories, not just metrics. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to get comfy being able to string a story together, clear beginning, middle, and end, like we learn in The Moth, which we'll talk about soon. What does this mean for you?
Yeah, so I found that the military really runs on data and metrics and facts, right? We're always like briefing multiple things. I started off as an intelligence officer, so that is constantly what I was like leaning on and really communicating. But, you know, philanthropy, but also civilian sectors, a lot of times they run on narratives. So I think it's really important that you learn to tell a story that's behind the numbers, that, you know, how lives are going to be changed, how barriers are going to fall, like why the work that you're doing really matters. And you need to connect that storyline. And I always like to say you need to connect the heartstrings, right, to the projects that you're doing so that people understand why you're doing this work and why it's so important in this moment.
There's a lot of advice out there when people are putting together resumes to include numbers and figures. And I do think that that's important, but it does need to be translated to the story behind that. If you are just spouting numbers and percentages and things like that, you are not showing your human side. So that is great advice. We will talk throughout the month in your guest episodes and your guest tipper episodes about staying humble and knowing your place in an organization before trying to make change. What does this mean specifically for you, having gone from one career where you were extremely successful, you were there for a long time, and now you are in a completely new space?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to remember that all your experience and your outsider perspective is really valuable, but you do need to stay humble. What I mean by that is that when I entered in philanthropy, I had such a nonlinear path and came from such a different background that I really brought fresh eyes to like problems, but only when I paired it again with like genuine listening. So don't really be the person that shows up saying like, well, in the military, we did this better. You know, ask how things work where you are and the why really before proposing changes.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be the person at your job who's constantly recalling your past experience out loud.
Try to avoid those comparison traps.
Totally. Let's talk now about being a parent. You,
yeah,
while you were in the military, you had a kid.
I did. I feel like
people don't know that that's possible, probably because there's not a lot of women who, I mean, there's obviously fewer women in the military than men. And this is definitely something that I've heard you talk about in the gender equity, in the fight for gender equity, is that, like, you know, disproportionately childcare falls on women. And I want to talk to you about what it's like being a boy mom in 2025, especially in this internet age. What do you have for us?
So it's pretty funny. You know, I have deployed multiple times in combat zones, but nothing really prepared me for the judgment of other moms or navigating the internet with boys in 2025. So here's kind of what I've been learning as I've been growing alongside my child. So the first tip I have is, like, you know, model the behavior that you want to see in your kid. So my son, you know, is constantly observing me, right? He's watching how I'm handling conflict, uncertainty, you know, sometimes failure, more than he really listens to the lectures I'm giving him. So I want him to be brave and kind, and I have to show him what that looks like every day. So I'm really all about, like, model the behavior that you want your kids to emulate.
That sounds so ideal, and it's probably hard to implement at times.
Can be, absolutely. You know, sometimes when I come home from work after a really long day, I just want to, like, lie on the couch and scroll mindlessly on my phone. And I have to be really cognizant of putting the phone down, be present, because I haven't seen my kid all day. And, you know, it takes sometimes a lot of energy that I don't have. But I think it's really important to model that behavior. And, you know, I don't want him, he has an iPad, he's not on it very much, but I also don't want him to see, like, oh, when adults don't want to converse, they just turn to their social media, they turn to their phones.
Right.
So I just think it's really important that you model the behavior that you want them to emulate.
Right. Like, we do turn to our phones when we're tired, but being our best selves, we do not do that. So I like the idea. Right. I like that you model being your best self as much as you possibly can in front of your kid.
Yeah.
What about media literacy?
Oh, this is so important. I think it's really important to teach this really early on. You know, I don't ban screens in my household, but I'm constantly, you know, asking him if he's talking about something in the news. Like, he hears so much at school, too. So I'm always questioning, like, oh, okay, well, where'd you hear this? Do you know, what the source is or where that person learned that from? And then, you know, I'm asking, like, how does that make you feel? Like, I'm really trying to teach him critical thinking. Is the skill that he's going to need the most in life. I really believe that.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to start that really early. And, you know, I don't want him just to believe anything he sees on the internet or anything he sees on YouTube, because YouTube is bananas and crazy stuff gets
algorithm,
put on there.
Rabbit hole. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So I think it's really important for parents to question that, but in a way that you're curious about what they're learning and then you're not immediately like, well, that's not true.
Right.
Right. Like, you want to understand, you know, what is it that they are hearing and what is it that they're deriving from it and believing, and then have, like, a good constructive conversation with them.
Yeah. So leading with curiosity to say,
yeah,
huh, where'd you get that from? What do you think
exactly
about that? That's that's good, and probably applies also to adults who are not great at media literacy either, which is definitely a problem. Give us the takeaway for your advice for being a parent in this Oh, wow, it's 2026. I realized, like, I referred just a second ago to 2025, but hey, it's 2026. What's it like being a parent now, and what's your main takeaway?
You know, my main takeaway is that every day I tell my son, like, you have survived 100% of your hardest days. And yeah. I think that's also a good reminder to myself, too. You know, parenting is, you know, in my opinion, probably the longest leadership challenge you're going to face. So trust your instincts, you know, engage in conversation with your kids, be present as much as possible in their lives. And then model that behavior you want them to see. You know, at the end of the day, I want to create a kind, good human that genuinely cares about this world and our communities. So how can I emulate that? How can I demonstrate that? And how can I work alongside him to really, you know, entrench those values and principles in his life?
I want to briefly touch on work-life balance, because one of the things that I've heard you talk about is having a family and having to work. So how do you integrate your work with your life?
So I'm going to start off by saying, because people ask me this all the time, I start off by saying, like, I don't believe in the term work-life balance. I don't think it exists. What I believe in is values-based trade-offs. So here's what I mean about this. You know, I believe that there's a myth of having it all. Everyone wants to have it all. They want to have the successful career. They want to have the perfect family. They want to have, you know, everything is just goes run smoothly all the time. But, you know, that's never the reality on the ground. So I just remember, you know, making the choice. I had to deploy multiple times, knowing that I was going to miss birthdays. I was going to miss graduations. I was going to miss bedtimes. But the value-based trade-off for me was, you know, it wasn't really a failure of balance at the time, because when I deploy, like, obviously my job is taking precedence over my family. But some seasons require sacrifice in one area in order to honor your values in another. So what I'm talking about is really trying to understand, like, what in this moment is important to you and your family, and how can you ensure that going forward, that you're spending as much amount of time as you can in both of those buckets.
Okay, so Maya, we're unfortunately going to have to wrap up in a moment. You have so much great advice for us, so many amazing stories. I teased this a few times, and I really want to touch on it in earnest. You are a moth storyteller. Tell us, what is the moth? How did you get into it? And how does storytelling play a part in your life?
Yeah, The Moth is this incredible nonprofit that has this amazing podcast in which they hold story slams all over the world. And usually they'll set a theme for each story slam, but people come up and they tell real authentic stories about how that theme resonates with them. And it's usually, you know, that's in every city across the world. You can go to the shows and you can put your name in the hat to participate. And if you're one of the 10 lucky storytellers to be picked, then you go up on the stage with a microphone, no notes, and you just tell a story for 5 minutes. And I fell in love with this. I fell in love with the podcast first because, you know, I've lived all over the world. I've been in Europe, in Africa, in the Middle East. And it was like finding a home for myself. You know, I could listen to these stories that made me laugh, made me cry. You know, they are the best of humanity. And it just made me feel like I was in community. And I also realized that storytelling is the most powerful tool to create connection and empathy with people. So that's just something that always resonated with my soul. When I moved to New York City, I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so excited. I can finally participate in story slams. It's so scary to get up there, I'm not gonna lie. But once you finish your 5 minute story and you get down off the stage, you're like, it's just like this rush of pride and excitement. And, you know, people come up and they truly resonate with your stories. Yeah. They're like, God, I love this part. I love, you know, when I laughed, or like some people will cry, or they're like, hey, I don't feel so alone anymore because something in your story resonated with me.
I am a huge fan of The Moth. I've been to at least 20 story slams. I used to volunteer at The Moth in Los Angeles. I've never told a story myself, but I think about it a lot. Just, and I'm scared, but I do love public speaking, so I don't know why I'm scared. Anyway, do you have one quick tip for us on if somebody wants to become a storyteller?
Yeah, I think everyone develops their own process. Whenever I look at the MOP website and I see what story slams are coming up and I see the theme, I really try to check in with myself, like, does this theme resonate with me? I'm not just trying to create a story that fits that theme. Really, I'm trying to have that theme, you know, resonate with one of the stories that I've experienced. And then it's just a process, right? Like, I love to write my stories out. I practice them. And then I start kind of like whittling them down to, because it has to be 5 minutes. Like, that is like the requirement. And I think my tip for people that, you know, want to get good at that is like, you're not going to get good unless you try, right? You got to step into the arena. You got to step up and you got to tell your story. And I guarantee you, no one's going to boo you. No one's going to be like, oh, you suck. Get off the stage. It's like a really supportive community. And I think people just feel privileged to hear your story and to hear your experiences. And as I mentioned before, you never know who you're going to be resonating with, right? You never know, you know, the story you're going to tell is going to make someone feel seen or feel loved or feel validated in who they are. So yeah. I think it's an amazing opportunity. And I really, you know, recommend everyone trying it at least once.
And there's always weird serendipitous things that happen at Moth Story Slams. And I really think there's something in there for everyone. Even if like yeah. the quality of the stories that are told are not super high, it's still so beautiful. The humanity of it, I think, mm-hmm. makes it worth it. And
yes.
highly recommend going. I guess the tip for yeah. me is go to themoth.org and look up the closest Moth Story Slam and go to it Absolutely. In your city, Tippendales. Maya, you were amazing. You have so many arenas of your life with which to pull tips from. So Tippendales, definitely check out Maya's tips throughout this month. Before we head out, Maya, tell us some of the things that you're working on and where people can find you and follow you and be a part of all the Maya Molina Schaefer goodness.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably like the most professional website that I can provide. But I also just kind of launched my own keynote speaking business called Voice in the Arena. And that organization is really just to help leaders find courage to really step into their own arenas, kind of based on what I've navigated throughout my many pivots and transitions from boxing rings to boardrooms. And so I'm just really excited to kind of share those stories with you, share stories of courage, and really kind of how do you build high-performing teams in complex environments as a leader? How do you communicate that? How do you inspire? So that's kind of the best place to find me, voicein-the-arena.com.
Ooh.
Send me a note.
Good domain grab. And Maya, your work at Amplify Her Foundation, what do you have coming up? It's a big thing.
We actually have an incredible program that we're launching in April called the Amplify Her Incubator. So we're really excited to do this program where we are choosing 10 incredible women in New York City that are trying to solve a problem at the base community level. So our tagline is closest to the problem, closest to the solution. And during this incubator, they're going to get 6 months of curriculum and mentorship. And then it's going to culminate in a pitch competition where they can compete for seed funding so they can utilize that to create their own nonprofit or campaign. So we're really excited to launch this. You know, it's exactly what is needed right now in our communities, especially kind of in this political climate that we're finding in. And we're really demonstrating how much we believe in the women in New York City to really create the changes that we and they want to see in their communities.
So if you want to learn more about that, you can go to amplifyherfoundation.org. Check out everything that they've got going on. They also have a podcast, and that podcast is called If She Can Make It Here. Maya is one of the co-hosts. Maya, tell us in one sentence who should check out the show.
I think anyone should check out this show that wants to be inspired by the incredible work that's being done on the ground in our communities today to really, you know, create pathways and opportunities for women and girls to become change makers in our society.
Ooh, succinct, beautiful. I love it. That is the conversation. Maya, thank you so much for joining us today and throughout the month. So many tips, packed few episodes that we've got upcoming for you, Tippendales. Maya, again, you rock. Appreciate you joining us. And Tippendales, we'll catch you next time.
Thank you, Ariel.
If If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.